Welcome back, episode 33. We are back at it once a motherfucking again. I don't know where that came from. Hey, we got an oldie but a goodie back for you. We welcome back one of the friends we've made along the way.
Yeah, this is Brandon from Cars and Comrades.
Yeah, we welcome back Brandon from Cars and Comrades. Had a really good conversation about Trump and just kind of the nature of...
Yes, that's right. We talked about Trump for the very first time.
We said we were never going to do it, but in light of the breaking news today, May 30th, we decided we had to kind of... We would be remiss if we didn't say something about Trump. So we talked about Trump a little bit. We give a Rafa update. We talk a little bit about the strike in Yemen against the Houthis. And we had a really good conversation. Really good dude, really bright dude. Always a pleasure to talk with Brandon. Yeah.
Don't forget to follow Cars and Comrades.
Yeah.
And then without further ado, let's get right into the video. It's nice to see you again. It's been, what was it, episode 27?
So it's 27 to 33, I guess 6 weeks since we last spoke.
Sounds right.
Yeah. How you been in the last 6 weeks?
It's been an exceptionally good 6 weeks.
Nice. Yeah, we were talking a little bit off air, and you're saying these things are just kind of going well.
Yeah. Enjoying my free time since I'm not working. I do have to, like, buckle down and get a job, but I'm going to try and time it so that I start work in mid-July, which will... be right after the first Cars and Comrades road trip, because we're all actually going to be getting together for the first time in person in July.
Very cool.
Very excited about that.
What does the road trip entail? Is there details you can share about that?
I live in Western Pennsylvania. Connor lives in Chicago, and Zach and Bryant live in Denver. So I'm going to drive up to Chicago, hop in the car with Connor, and we're going to road trip out to Denver to hang out with Zach and Bryant. And gonna do some camping, some sightseeing, just fucking around.
I imagine Colorado's beautiful this time of year. I've been to Colorado Springs, and I think that's somewhere on the east of the mountains, but I'm not exactly where, because I was a real little kid and it was the dead of winter. But I imagine it's probably beautiful in the summer.
There's so many different I think Colorado Springs is more desert, and obviously there's the Rockies, and I haven't been to Colorado much in the last 10 years, but I ended up there a handful of times in my 20s, and it was always very excellent.
Very cool.
Like, Denver's fine, but it's probably the worst part of Colorado.
Yeah, I've always wanted to go to, Fort Collins, and there's another Estes Park, that kind of, area. There's a lot of breweries there, and it's kind of just smaller college towns with a lot of breweries that apparently just have, cool... restaurants and beers, and I've always wanted to cruise around there. To say nothing of, that's where The Shining was filmed. That's where the hotel is,
right?
The Stanley Hotel, or I think it's actually called the Overlook Hotel in Estes Park. So I've always wanted to stay there because it's a real functioning hotel, and I'm a big Stephen King nerd. So I was like, that'd be a cool 40th birthday party, I guess, is my next big birthday party. So maybe I'll do that for my 40th in a couple years.
Oh, yeah. I don't think I've been anywhere in the middle of the country. I've been on the coasts. And I guess the furthest middle of the country from the East Coast side I've been has been Harrisburg, but that's still the East Coast, I guess.
Pennsylvania?
Yeah, that's a couple hours from Philly, which is on the coast.
Yeah, so that's the furthest I've been inside the coast besides...
Wow, really?
Yeah.
You stay within 100 miles of the border?
Pretty much.
Remember that law that the Border Patrol has jurisdiction 100 miles from the border? Is that still a thing? I remember that was
I think so.
I believe that's the thing. I don't think Biden's changed anything.
Yeah.
Border Patrol is one of those weird things that people like to kind of forget about, but they definitely have.
Yeah, I think that law gave them an astonishing amount of power. It gives them jurisdiction 100 miles from the border inland. So which is essentially Tucson, Arizona, which is 90 miles from the border or whatever. The 100 miles of border is 90% of America's population, I think, or something, or some crazy number.
It's some really, really high
it's
number.
It's a ridiculous
it's
number.
Yeah, over three quarters, I think.
And I think the implications of that law, this is not something we'd plan to talk about, so I'm probably going to get some of these details wrong, but the implications of that law were they have search and seizure powers, and they have an inordinate amount of power that they shouldn't have, that seems somewhat unconstitutional, but because of a combination of the Patriot Act and that law, they have just too much power.
I just don't understand how they could have the beginning of the coast to count as the border.
Yeah,
I
just changed the definition of what the border is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So,
yeah, Yeah, I was born in Oklahoma, so I was pretty much in the middle of the...
Dude, you were everywhere.
That's yeah, I've been like, all over. Well, I guess I haven't been that many places, but like...
Well, it's like born in Oklahoma, raised partially in Louisiana, you know, in the fucking like, what, 50 miles from the bayou or whatever.
Well, I mean, I was from Northwest Louisiana, so it was pretty much just a forest, yeah.
Yeah, and then you fucking grew up in Arizona. And lives in Seattle. I was just like, wow.
Been all around this great big country. Yeah, I've been all around the South, some East Coast, a lot of West Coast, but I didn't really spend a whole lot. I was born in Oklahoma, but I moved to Louisiana when I was 11 months old, so it's not like I remember it or anything. I never like actually
you just haven't tried hard
experienced
enough.
It. I have no desire to go back, I guess. It's Oklahoma. I don't really... There's nothing drawing me to Oklahoma.
What is in Oklahoma, really?
They have an interesting burger style. They have like the Oklahoma burger. It's like an onion burger. I'm a big food, cultural, like regional food guy, and Oklahoma has... it's like an Oklahoma onion burger. They like they mix like raw, like I think like raw or sauteed onions in the beef, so it's like just it's beef and onion like a chopped cheese, but basically just like chopped onion as a burger patty.
I'm hungry now already.
Anyway,
I've generally heard positive stuff about Oklahoma City.
Yeah, I was from Tulsa, so I don't know. Yeah.
No, I've known a handful of people here and there through different worlds that I've passed through, and across the board, everybody seemed fairly fond of Oklahoma City.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, I mean, I would like to just travel. I really want to go to Wyoming. There's a bunch of places I want to go. Montana, Wyoming. You know, Kanaan made it sound like I've been all over, but I've really only been to, like, those four states. So I don't really, you know, have that much experience with America. I got to go let my dogs in. Give me 1 second.
Yeah, go for it.
So you guys.
Yeah, no, I moved here from Bosnia when I was, like, 3 years old. And I stayed in Everett, Washington for, like... fucking forever until a few years ago when I moved out, and I won't say exactly where I am now so I don't get doxxed. But besides that, just a few places I've gone to, like Cali, Oregon, Pennsylvania, like Harrisburg area.
What an odd place to end up if you don't travel much.
Yeah, I mean, I traveled plenty. I've been to a lot of Europe because, again, I went to go back to Europe to go see my family. So I've been to Bosnia, I've been to Croatia, Montenegro. I've been to Germany for a month, France for 2 days, and that's all I want to go to France for. Fucking French. I've been to Austria, I've been to Turkey, I've been to Japan, you know. So I've been to a decent amount of places, dude, but...
Jesus Christ, I have never left the country, but I think I've been to something like 46 states.
That's cool.
There's nothing here that really just like draws me in to go to like other parts of America besides few like national environmental things like, I don't know, the Grand Canyon or Yellowstone. But like if somebody says like, oh, do you want to go to, you know, to Oklahoma City? I'm just like, I'd rather go to Madrid or Barcelona.
I don't know. Grand Canyon's beautiful. I haven't been. That's pretty cool.
Well, yeah, so. That's what I mean for like, you know, physical geographic shit. But. Yeah, I don't know.
I've only ever been to Mexico and not even that far deep. I've been to Rocky Point and a bunch of like border cities, but I've never left the country besides northern Mexico.
Kansas doesn't really seem enticing as, you know, going to Belgium.
I don't know. It's just, you know, I'd like to check out all the states.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Really just comes down to money and time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like...
Well, anyway, want to get into this? We've been rambling about just states and countries for a while.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. All right. And like we kind of said earlier... We've been really hesitant to talk about Trump because, like, first of all, who gives a shit? And so, like, it's just, I don't know. It's boring to me. I like all these, like, kind of liberal pundits that are just, like, just harping on, like, they make their bread and butter just talking about Trump 24/7. It always just seemed boring to me. And we've kind of talking about Trump a couple of times. And every time we've just decided, no. But there was big news today. Which will ultimately, I think, result in nothing at all. But Trump was found guilty on all 34 felony counts a few hours ago. First president to ever be found guilty of a felony. Yeah. So the sentencing happens July 11th. I think the max is 4 years per felony. So, I mean, like, in theory, it could be, like, a life sentence if all 34 felonies carry at least, like, a couple of years. Or even if each 34 carries 1 year or even 6 months. He's 77 years old. That could be a life sentence for him. But, I mean,
they're gonna... such a robust, healthy...
I don't know. I mean, they're going to appeal this, which is going to delay sentencing as it goes through the appeals process.
I don't know, man. That adrenochrome, he might be surviving to like 155. We've got to watch out. He'll come out and like when he's like 120 and like go run for president again.
And this is just the hush money trial, like the Michael Cohen, Stormy Daniels, like salacious one. Yeah. So this has nothing to do with any of like the overturning the elections or the Georgia or the other Manhattan trial. This is just the New York hush money trial, which if anybody's unfamiliar, and I had to kind of like read a few different articles to unpack this because I have not followed this news at all. But in a nutshell, it's that in 2006, Donald Trump had sex with porn star Stormy Daniels. In 2016, the lead up to the presidential election, Donald Trump ordered Michael Cohen, his then attorney and kind of fixer, to pay Stormy Daniels, I think $140,000 to as hush money to keep her quiet prior to the election, because like that would look bad as a presidential nominee that had sex with a porn star. The illegality, which is in itself not illegal, but the illegality came from then like the reimbursement from, I think, both campaign funds and writing it off as a business expense, which is like fraud. So this is like really like boring like financial crime shit that like is like it's just 34 different kind of accounts of like fraud and criminal accounting and stuff.
But that's
so, like,
really what Trump is at the end of the day. It's just all just fucking
all just,
accounting,
yeah,
and
accounting
business fraud.
Fraud shit. Yeah. So that's what essentially what these felonies are, is it's nothing like insanely like super illegal. It's just business malpractice, basically just using campaign funds to pay back personal stuff, which is something I think like who else just got in trouble for that? Santos got in trouble for it all the time. Remember George Santos, but I mean that's really all that happened. So what implication does this have? I think none. I think that for one thing, it won't stop him from running for president. The appeals process will take longer than the election, so he could, in theory, be president on November 5th, or, you know, by November 5th, he'll win the presidency and then just pardon himself.
I see. I would argue that what this means is that because he's the first president ever convicted of crimes, by extension, that means he's the first president to ever commit crimes. So now we know how innocent all the other presidents have been.
This exonerates Obama.
Yeah.
God.
And Bush. they committed no war crimes.
Oh, my God. You really got to make sure the sarcasm comes out, because these liberals will fucking believe you.
That's another thing I don't like. That's another reason I don't like talking about these things, is because, like ultimately this has no bearing on anything, really. This is just like news fodder for like YouTube views. But like at the end of the day, he's either going to pardon himself if he wins, or it'll be tied up in appeals courts until he dies. And so like ultimately, like there's no substance here that will change anything for like, I mean, if you want to think of it in like Marxist terms to get like douchey about it, but like there's no substance here that in any way impacts like working class people whatsoever. Like there's just, these are just non-stories for people that like, I don't know, think the way we think, I think. I don't know.
Yeah.
What do you guys think?
My main question is like, how is he even able to run for president even if he's convicted of a felony? Because I know with like, if you're convicted of a felony, you can't even vote.
Oh, yeah. There's the high crimes and misdemeanors clause of the Constitution.
Can you explain it to us?
No.
Because I'm
a lawyer. I don't know. Yeah.
My girlfriend asked me that earlier today. She's like, how can he even run if he is convicted of a felony? And I'm just
it's
like,
all made up bullshit. Like, Cenk Uygur's running for president, and he's not a natural born citizen. And like, he's still running for president because, like, I mean, at the end of the day, we all say we like the Constitution, but I think like anybody who like just says, nah, I'm going to ignore it, everyone else just goes, yeah, okay, I guess that's fine. I don't know.
I'll give the Constitution a chance if I'm ever like near it and I'm out of toilet paper. But
right.
That's it.
It's like, I mean, who gives a shit? Like, that's another thing. It's like, yeah, I see your point. Like, yeah, technically, I think legally speaking, you raised the point that, yeah, there is a clause in the Constitution that bars you from like office for if you've been convicted of high crimes and misdemeanors. That was the whole drama with like Colorado taking him off the ballot, and someone like New Hampshire or whatever that other state was that took him off the ballot, which was then overturned by either the Supreme Court or the state Supreme Court. I forget which. This was like late last year or whenever this was. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't see how anyone
I remember
really
the
cares.
Legal thing sort of being that like you're forbidden from doing whatever if you've been convicted of high crimes or misdemeanors, but it does not define what that means, and because it leaves it open to interpretation, it might as well mean nothing.
Right. And I think like what some people would argue is like, well, that's only treason, right? Unless you've been straight up convicted of treason, then you're fine, which I think is what I heard some people like in favor of not in favor of Trump, but like arguing that like devil's advocate argument or whatever, where it's like, well, as long as it's not treason, it should be fine. Which I don't know. Again, it's the who cares?
It's just, an American politics. It's also a joke at the end of the day, because like the same people who follow Trump are very big supporters of the Second Amendment, and saying you can't do anything, you can't bear any restrictions or anything like that. But then when Trump is running, Father Trump is running, and he becomes president, and in the Constitution, you technically can't be if you have a felony or whatever, misdemeanor. They're like, oh, but that doesn't count.
Yeah, and, it's just the populist mindset of like.
For me, it's just the hypocrisy of like the right wing, and it's not like the left wing is any better, but it's just like it's just kind of funny how it's like it's just kind of sitting right in their face, and if it was say a criminal that came out of a regular ass jail for stealing, for theft, and he was trying to run for city council, that'd be completely against it.
Yeah,
I just kind of want to point out the hypocrisy there.
Yeah, I don't know if that's true though. I don't know if I actually believe that anymore, because like I think that would have been true at some point, right? Where like, I mean, the amount of like shit surrounding Trump, I think 20 years ago or even like a couple of elections ago would have stopped somebody from becoming a presidential nominee. But I think that like since Trump, and this isn't a new thought by any means, but like I think that that's just kind of broken the seal or like opened the floodgates in a way that like I don't think anything matters anymore. I think like moving forward, I think presidential elections are going to be open to just anybody, everybody, because like now we've broken that like illusion that this is some like actual high office that like is noble and like only honorable noble men can take it. Like, well, that illusion is shattered. It's never been true, but there was always that illusion that it was. And
yeah,
you know, and I think Trump has really shown that like it's a fucking clown fiesta and anybody can hop in. And like
also I think that there is historical precedent that like you can be a convicted felon or whatever and still run and legally hold office. Like
Eugene Debs,
not that he won. Yeah, Eugene Debs won ran from prison, and I, for as much as I've read about that, I've never seen anything that said, well, he would not have actually been eligible if he won.
Yeah, I think I agree. I don't know that there has been any other, like, I've never seen anything that said that he couldn't have, and I think he got not an insignificant amount of votes from prison, so, you know.
Yeah, it was like 17 to 19%, I remember.
I don't know if it was that high, but it was still like
4 to 6.
Yeah, but it was still not an insignificant amount of people is my point. But I don't remember the actual numbers.
But 4 to 6 is more than like the Libertarian Party.
Yeah, I think it was less than 10%. But it was but still the point stands is that he did it. A lot of that campaigning and a lot of that election was done from prison.
Yeah.
So yeah, there is precedent for just being in prison, or at least having convicted criminals be on the ballot.
Yeah, it was just a rhetorical question at the end. I know exactly that it doesn't mean shit, but it's like I'm just trying to get like the thought process is like, what the fuck does the Constitution actually mean then? Like we're not following anything,
you're not wrong.
The fuck?
I mean, the hypocrisy of these people is like is well documented, and like I find a very weird, sick, guilty pleasure in watching YouTube. If you're familiar with I think I've talked about this before, how my fetishization of the First Amendment auditors, if you're familiar with like YouTube First Amendment auditors and these guys that just go and like do, are either of you familiar with this concept of a First Amendment auditor?
I'm not sure.
So
essentially, I've heard the phrase. I'm not sure I know what it means.
I mean, what it is essentially is it's like some kind of misguided libertarian. Is there almost always misguided libertarians who haven't read enough of any kind of philosophy, let alone Marxist philosophy, but just read enough anything that are just so enamored with the Constitution and like kind of to your point earlier of the specifically First, Second, Fourth, Fifth Amendments. And so they'll go and they'll put themselves in positions of like what is essentially put themselves in positions of danger, like either antagonistic toward police or at least like.
OK, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Very much like blasé with when it comes to police. So they'll like go into a police station and just start recording or go into a public service, any kind of public service office, somewhere that is technically public property. So they do have the First Amendment right to record government citizens. But it's like, and then they'll just like what they're pointing out is the flaws in police knowledge of the First Amendment, and police will be like, oh, you can't film here or whatever, and they're like, actually you can, and the police will say boop, and then the second you deny a police order, then shit always escalates, and so they invariably will either be arrested or handcuffed and detained or whatever, and then they'll sue the police department, and that's the grift essentially, where it's like,
hey man, I gotta hop onto that.
Yeah. but the problem is that you're right, there these people like will have like clothes that say We the People. They'll have like the We the People tattoos. They will be like enamored with the Constitution, but still like and hate police, or at least like understand that the police, they're like, they're looking for the good police, or like, you know, they're just here to root out bad police, but they always miss the point of like, well, there is no such thing as good police, or there is no like they just always, they just, it just seems like they're always one like epiphany away from actually realizing what it is they're protesting, or like the problem with their logic. And it's the same thing as what you mentioned of like, yeah, these people are like enamored with the Constitution, but they support somebody who flagrantly like just will ignore it if it suits them. And it's just funny. And yeah, it would be funny if it weren't very depressing.
Yeah. I find it wholly uninteresting to point out these people's hypocrisy, because if there was consequences, or if they had the sort of self-awareness to say like, oh, you know what? You're right. That's not consistent. Let me reevaluate what I believe. But
yeah,
I imagine that for every one person that has ever happened to, there's 10,000 more who, the irony is completely lost on them. And it's just you wasting brain power so that you got an aha moment that you can't enjoy.
Yeah. I have never met somebody who is any way remotely believing of these types of things that has even been like willing to have a conversation in good faith to like that their mind could be changed. I've never seen that either in person or on the internet. Like, you know, so I agree with you. It's just, I don't know. The whole thing is just better left just like ignored and then moved on to like other greener pastures that where maybe some good can be done.
I mean, I think to bring it slightly back on track a little bit, even the reason I see me and my friends not really giving a fuck about any of the Trump stuff is the liberal position seems to be that like once he's caught, you know, once you show the right, the conservatives, so on and so forth, that he is a hypocrite and that he doesn't stand for the things that he says, then you've got them. Like this, again, it's this big aha moment, but nobody actually gives a shit. They're not ideologically consistent enough for it to matter. So it's this big show to be made of it, but there's no substance to it. It's he's not going to do jail time. It's a performative trial. It doesn't fucking matter.
That was our point from the beginning. It's like, that's why we've been so hesitant to even talk about this, because it's like at the end of the day, it just doesn't matter. And yeah, like there's like, go on YouTube and just search like the montages of anybody saying like, you know, if Trump were convicted, would you still vote for him or would you care? And they say, yeah, sure. I mean, like that doesn't bother me. That's not a breaking point. That's not a like, that's not in any way like a, I don't know what you call it, like a selling point to dissuade them from supporting Trump. And then you're right, like liberals still have this like weird misguided notion that it is, that like the second he's found guilty that they'll all just like come to their senses and be like, oh, you know what, you were right all along. And it's like, that they have long since given a shit that like he's not their messiah. I mean for like lack of a better like idea, that's kind of what it comes down to. So I don't know, the whole thing is just
the funny thing silly to me is that they're so quick and eager to point out the ideological inconsistencies of conservatives that they seem to have tunnel vision and cannot see their own ideological inconsistencies. Like, you know, you can point out the differences between Trump and Biden, but at the end of the day, like, they're marginal and inconsequential. It's the meme that I keep seeing that I like, that I think sums it up well, is, you know, Trump said that he could kill somebody in the middle of Fifth Avenue and he'd get away with it. And, you know, now Biden's proving that he could kill 30,000 Palestinians in the middle of Fifth Avenue and he could get away with it. So,
goddamn, that's fucking deep.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Fucking deep.
Well, I mean, well said. Yeah, I haven't heard that put that way, but yeah.
I saw that the other day and I was just like, yeah, I mean.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. I mean, that's essentially what it is. I still have conversations with people at my work who are like, you know, vaguely pro-Palestine or like, you know. We talked about these types of people last week of like, you know, supporting of a two-state solution and like, you know, kind of like finally starting to kind of turn on Israel, but like would in no way question even like the idea of not voting for Biden would disgust them, right? Like when you say, well, like, so then you shouldn't vote for Biden, they're like, but that's, you know, that's unheard of. And it's like, okay, well, you haven't actually thought about Trump this long enough. Yeah, exactly. So it's like, well, then you actually haven't like really bared down on your kind of your ideology and your position on this. And
yeah, the only point that I ever hear made that has any vague resonance of relevancy here is, you know, to think about how bad things will be domestically if Trump gets reelected. And a part of me wants to say, like, not that I want Trump, I don't want either of them, but like, you know, that's the thing you always have to defend is if you don't like Biden, you also have to be like, well, I don't like Trump either.
Yeah.
But
they'll immediately shame you. They'll immediately shame you. What about the LGBTQ community? I'm like, they're fucked right now, too. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
But like, I'm quick to point out that the thing that you're afraid of is that Trump will do fascism in the literal sense of bringing foreign policy home. You're desperately afraid that somebody might get elected that will treat you the way that we have treated the rest of the world for 100 years. So, like, just, like, steep it. Like, let that sink in. Because that's important. Like,
yeah.
If your big fear, like, if you're not afraid of how Biden will treat the rest of the world, but you are afraid that Trump will treat you that way, look inwards a little bit. There's a lot going on that you could assess.
Yeah, well said. I mean, that's kind of what it comes down to. That's the crux of it. It's just a lack of empathy for what is already happening to other people. You only care about if it potentially or hypothetically could happen to you.
The whole third world argument where it's like, okay, the conservatives want to have like fucking dirt poor poverty in the U.S., but the liberals are okay with it happening in the third world as long as we get those nice commodity goods.
Right.
Right. So if it's happening over there, who gives a fuck? But if it happens here, that's horrible. So it's the fact that it's just that lack of empathy from liberals. Yep. It's like, if it's not happening to us, I don't care, out of sight, out of mind. But if it's happening to, you know, other people on Earth, fuck those people. I don't give a fuck. We got nice iPhones right now.
Yeah. Well, we only had two short stories in addition to the Trump thing, which one is a little more involved. The second one is real quick, and I don't have a ton of information on this. But today, U.S. strikes Houthis in Yemen again. For the first time in months, there was a big airstrike on the Houthis today. Yeah, I was actually just kind of trolling the news right now, and I saw it. The whole, like, Houthis and the Yemeni, like, side of this conflict, for lack of a better term, has really not been getting, like, a whole lot of attention from really anybody left or right. It's just kind of quietly been happening. There was, like, some memes made about the Yemeni pirates, like, you know, when they were kind of doing their shit a few months ago. But I don't know. I thought I'd be remiss if I didn't just bring it up that the U.S. just killed a few more Houthis in Yemen today, which seems, like, strange that you could just bomb Yemen. And the reason we could bomb Yemen is because they have no capability to bomb us back. They're basically like one of the fucking poorest countries on the planet, so like,
yeah,
we can do whatever the fuck we want to Yemen and literally no one cares.
It's also because there's a fucking blockade from Saudi Arabia as well,
and they can't do anything. So it's just, I don't know, I just wanted to call out the hypocrisy of just like blatantly bombing a country with repercussions.
A country we could bomb and there would be actual repercussions.
Fair enough, but I mean, like, at least if we bombed, like, I don't know, Iran or well, I guess we already bombed Iraq. I'm thinking of other Middle Eastern countries. Yeah, I just mean like small Middle Eastern countries. Like, yeah. It's just crazy that we can just bomb Yemen with impunity, and it barely even makes headlines, let alone outrage. Which
it's
is
just so normalized. Yeah. That's how fucking shitty it is.
I don't know. I just wanted to bring it up to speak for the Yemeni. Yeah, I mean, Obama did bomb
was
Yemen
like, you know, his
bit,
favorite
yeah.
pastime event was bombing Houthi weddings. It's just like,
yeah.
The same shit. They didn't bring up then. They're not going to bring it up now. The only reason it's Palestine right now is because how bad the atrocity is and because people keep fucking posting. They won't stop. And it's honestly fantastic because this is the first time I've never seen like rallies or a movement not slow down, not lose momentum. Like,
yeah, it's been going for, I don't know, what is this?
Black Lives Matter, it lost momentum eventually. This, it's like, it's just because the atrocities are just getting worse and worse. So now we have like some celebrities like finally coming out and we're like, hey, maybe don't kill Palestinians.
And then they're called anti-Semitic and lose job opportunities.
Yeah.
Because of it. But yeah.
It's crazy.
Who was it that like actually wore a Palestinian pin on their lapel and it got photoshopped out of their magazine photo?
I didn't hear about that.
What the fuck?
Oh, I forget who it was.
I think Pedro Pascal has been pretty like vocal. Pedro Pascal seems like he's pretty cool.
It wasn't him.
It was somebody else. I forget who it was. I don't even know if he mentioned Palestine in the article that the picture was taken for, but he wore a pin and somebody had like juxtaposed that, like, he wore the pin, but then, like, in the published image, it had been photoshopped.
It had been just airbrushed out or whatever of the magazines. Huh.
You know what would have been really good if he came out, like, on YouTube or something and said something about that? It would have been embarrassing for that fucking magazine.
I'm going to try to find that.
Again, you're seeking ideological consistency. I don't.
That was Guy Pearce
for the magazine. It would be the status quo for the magazine.
Yeah, it was Vanity Fair and it was Guy Pearce. I don't know Guy Pearce was cool. That's cool. I like Guy Pearce.
It's Guy Pearce.
He was in, I'm
better with faces. H.G.
Wells' Time Machine. He was in Lawless. I mean, he's in a bunch of. He's Guy Pearce.
He's Guy Pearce.
He's in Ravenous.
I've never seen Ravenous.
It's a weird fictionalized account of, cannibalism in the Wild West or whatever. Donner Party. That's what I was
thinking. Oh, okay, cool.
Sort of a fictionalized account of the Donner Party, where one of them is like a Wendigo.
I recognize his face, but I don't think I've actually seen him in any
movie.
For a while.
He was in that Christopher Nolan movie, Memento.
I've never seen that.
Oh, that's good. That's a good one. L.A. Confidential with Russell Crowe.
No.
God, you got to watch more movies, man.
Yeah, I do.
I'm gonna make you a list.
I am literally so busy with work and doing this fucking podcast.
Iron Man 3.
I don't think I've seen Iron Man 3.
All right, man. I got nothing for you then.
I don't watch Marvel movies that much, to be honest with you.
That was a bad one. Yeah. That's why I want to talk to. I think his name's Evan from Left of the Projector, because I'm a huge movie
Evan
guy.
Rules, yeah.
Yeah. I need to connect with that guy. I gotta have a conversation with him. Anyway, speaking of,
I love the show. Love that guy.
Yeah, Mike said exactly the same thing. He said he had nothing bad to say about Evan. So I gotta talk to him. We should message him, get him on.
Yeah.
Well, final. Speaking of, nice segue. Final thing is on Sunday, the Tent Massacre is what it's kind of being called. The Rafah bombing. Israelis stricken. There was an airstrike on this tent kind of tent city that was set up.
Yes.
This refugee tent area in Rafah on Sunday night, Monday morning. I don't quite know because the time difference. It was just an airstrike on a refugee tent city. Just kind of blatant.
Oh no, that's okay. Netanyahu came out and said that was a mistake. So
yeah,
that's fixed.
He said it was a tragic mistake, and then everyone's just like, "Well, he said it was a tragic mistake, so I guess we can move on." It's exactly what he said.
Yeah.
It said they were targeting Hamas leaders, and every article I read literally did not ask the question like how did that happen? If you're targeting Hamas leaders, how did you hit a Palestinian refugee tent city? And I read CNNBC, an MSN article. I was just all of the mainstream news articles that I read. Not one of the journalists questioned or even posed the question, how would one accidentally kill refugees if you were targeting Hamas leaders? Which the obvious answer is, well, they weren't. They were bombing a refugee center because that's what they do. If you just say that you were targeting Hamas, everyone closes their eyes and moves on. But I don't know. It was just, that was the frustrating part to me. And I've made this point before where it's that's becoming the most frustrating part of all this, is that it's still called the Israel-Hamas war. It's still called the Israel-Hamas conflict. They still no journalist will question anything Israel does for fear of reprisals from the AIPAC and all the whatever, the ADL and stuff, which is just so frustrating because they're just all so fucking spineless.
Yeah, they do hear afterwards. There was they came out with another phone call. That's why they struck it there. They struck a strategic building where they thought Hamas was coming from because they found a call. So they found a call, blah, blah, blah. So they struck it, and then they're trying to backtrack, that it wasn't them, that it was actually Hamas that caused the fire. One of their gun, what's the term for all the ammunitions and shit?
The depot, the cache.
Yeah, cache blew up because they struck a cache on accident that they didn't know about, and that caused the fire.
Oh, I didn't read any
right?
of that.
And
well, that would beg the question to me is why are you bombing that if you didn't even know it was a weapons cache?
Right.
They know. They said they accidentally. It happened to be right there. It just happened to be right there.
Either way you cut it, it doesn't pass a sniff test, right? There's no logic that tracks. Yeah.
But then there's a phone call. There is a phone call conversation that they claim was the Hamas representatives, Hamas operators. They're saying it wasn't. It was Israel didn't strike us. That was our cache that blew up and blah 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 and did this, and I'm like, it sounded like the same exact phone call after that Al Ahli hospital that they blew up. Remember that? It just sounds like the same exact people too, and you can barely hear them, barely make out what they're saying. But it's so fucking suspicious. It's just they're so calm talking to each other. It's like, oh, did that happen? Oh, it was our cache. It couldn't have been the Israelis.
Do you think it was an AI-generated phone call or something?
No, I think it was just a bunch of Israelis that were fluent in Arabic. And
No. To be very clear, somebody who was fluent in Arabic actually went through one of those previous phone calls that they said they had, and they were like, here are all the reasons that this is clearly not a native Arabic speaker.
Oh, okay. There's a lot of inconsistencies and nuance to it.
That was from the previous one from a long time ago.
Yeah.
This one just happened.
Like, oh, it happened again. Out, okay. Yeah.
So they're doing it again. So they're like recycling this method of trying to cover their tracks by coming out off with Hamas phone conversations, explaining that even Hamas believes it wasn't Israel that blew up the cache. It was their own like shrapnel or some bullshit. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? Like,
but what's their motivation to come up with a better excuse when they can give the most casual, offhanded, unproven excuse? And
yeah, that was my question.
Western media is just like, yeah, that's. We have no reason to second guess that.
That was my question. Like, why even go through all the trouble of like doctoring whatever this is when you can just say it was an accident and we meant to target Hamas? And everyone's just like, well, okay, it was an accident. They meant to target Hamas. Next question.
We have heard that Hamas is real bad.
Yeah. That's all you got to say is Hamas you're targeting Hamas. Yeah. I mean, this is just to kind of get back to the specifics of this. It's just another in a long, long, long line of war crimes. There was a the original strike. You know, killed however many people it killed, but then there was a pretty bad fire that spread throughout the tent city, or the tents that ultimately they thought it was 35. Then the later numbers have shown that's to be upwards of 45 dead, but there's still a lot of like kind of debris and burning, burning debris that they're going through. So that number's surely to rise in the coming days. And again, not unlike every other one of these kind of catastrophes, is that the majority of the dead are women and children, just like most.
I'm going to be really fascinated when we hear real numbers, because we've been hearing 30,000 dead.
35,000 for 6 months. Yeah. We've been talking about that for a while.
It it's risen up to 35,000 now.
Yeah. Yeah. The one thing we had said a while back was, or I saw, I think it was on, I don't know. I originally saw it, I want to say on Sally Hates Capitalism. One of her posts was that, like, you know, the thing we've kind of been repeating is that it's not that the numbers are staying still, it's that anyone who was counting it is dead. So there's nobody left alive to count.
How many mass graves have we heard about being discovered?
Yeah, like
since
three.
Since they said that the number was 30 or 35.
Right. Yeah, there was that three mass graves they found just a couple weeks ago again, or what, 3 weeks ago now or whatever. But yeah, and that number's been 35,000 since then. And so I don't know. It's.
I mean, on the conservative side, it's got to be 50,000 people dead.
I would say
that's like the most conservative.
But not including missing, and then just I think that number is north of 100,000 by this point. Like,
yeah, it's close.
Yeah, or at least close to. It's just the insanity, and this is to say nothing of the, you know, the famine that's just now kind of starting. Remember, the original estimates were early June for kind of the like the worst of the famine.
We're about to get to that point.
We're just now hitting this. So I think, not to be super morbid or to like play games or to like. Play prediction games with, you know, the number of dead women and children, but like I think those numbers are super soft. I think that it's going to be quite a bit higher when all the dust is settled.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot higher.
Yeah,
and like the numbers they're throwing off are not just conservative; they're just wrong.
They're just
simply wrong.
A lot of them are coming from Israeli like defense ministry, and like they're coming as,
because if the real numbers came out even like relatively close, the fucking world would go berserk. Imagine if you said 80,000 people dead right now. Like 80,000.
I don't know that.
I don't agree with you.
Yeah, I don't agree with you either.
I think there would just be more.
That sounds crazy. That's so many people. So like, so is 35,000.
Yeah.
There's a certain point where a number in your head is simply big or it's not.
And to say nothing that we watched 1 million Rwandans die 20 years ago and nobody really cared.
Yeah, but there was no social media back then. There was no way to like.
It was all over the news. It wasn't not.
Yeah, but this is all over the news too. And you can see how they're broadcasting it. But when social media is like, you have actual people broadcasting actual information with their own bias.
Yeah.
That's my own point.
I see your point there, but I still think that was almost 1 million.
Yeah, but if you doubled the numbers right now, it would have more impact. I'm not saying it would change everything.
Also, 20 years ago, that was 30 years ago.
I think if MSNBC right now said, actually, we just got a solid body count and it's 250,000, the people who care right now would be that much angrier and upset, and the people who don't care right now would still not care.
Yeah, I don't.
Okay, I agree with that.
Yeah, I just don't think that there's like some number revelation that's going to change people's minds. I think at this point, like, people who care, and people who don't. And I don't think a lot can change. I think it's not the numbers that's going to change people's minds. I think it's just the continued like pressure we put on people of like continuing to post just like the edited or the censored images that you have to like click, you know, see post or whatever. And I think just like the ongoing atrocities, like I think that will eventually just slowly turn more and more people. I think that will eventually radicalize, like change people's opinions. I don't think it's a numbers thing. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong there. Maybe that's a little too optimistic. I don't know. But I agree with you, Brandon. I think that people care who care, and people don't. And I don't think there's a lot of minds to be changed at this point.
Yeah, no, it's, we've gone to the point where like it doesn't really matter anymore. It's just like the people have made the decision who, you know, what matters.
It's horrifying. Like it's really like gut-wrenchingly horrifying. Because I look at it and I'm like, if you don't care by now, you're not going to. The people who do care are, like, I mean, I don't know, impotent to do anything about it. It's not like anyone is being listened to. Like, you can't even offer up the most milquetoast criticisms of Israel. Like, are they just going to, like, be allowed to successfully exterminate every Palestinian within the border?
And I think so. I would say
let's be really fucking honest. If every Palestinian is wiped off the face of this earth, they're not done. They're not going to stop just because they finally have the quote unquote state of Israel. They already crossed their borders when they feel like it.
Well, they already entered Golan Heights. They bombed Lebanon. This is just a start. This is the beginning. If we allow them to do this, if they want, they're going to go for greater Israel. You know,
and let's be real. Like, the American government would be happy as a pig in shit to see that happen.
Oh, sure.
100%.
Like,
an Israeli Middle East?
In the Middle East. So yeah. If they control the whole of the Middle East, and we've got basically the whole Middle East is just fucking Israel and Saudi Arabia, we are good with that.
We'd be happy. Yeah, exactly. For sure.
That's what they want.
Yeah. I mean, and like, we've talked about this a little bit before, and this is actually news because this happened this week too. Is an Egyptian soldier was shot, and it was unclear in the early days how it was happened, but as far as I can tell, it's been confirmed that it was a firefight with Israeli soldiers.
Wow, okay.
Like, there was an actual like clash between Egyptian soldiers and Israeli soldiers.
And I haven't heard on about the Rafah anywhere.
Border. Rafin? I don't think that's, but on the Rafah border. And again, I don't think we've talked about the kind of the spinelessness of Egyptians, and it's their country, and like it's, you know, it's, I will concede that it's unfair of me to kind of criticize Egypt too hard, but like, I don't know, if an American soldier were killed by, you know, an enemy force, we would,
I'll
sure
say
as
it for you,
made.
fuck the Egyptian government, pussies.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay.
And if their people aren't doing anything about it, they're fucking pussies too. I don't give a shit.
Yeah, I mean, so we'll see what they do about this. But as far as I can tell, that I think it was pretty much confirmed that it was a clash with it was an Israeli soldier that killed an Egyptian soldier. So like, that seems like it would be enough, you know, at least
I saw something.
I saw
a news story earlier today or yesterday where they, like whatever squad or whatever. Egyptians were saying that one of their people was killed by an Israeli sniper. Jeez. Not in a firefight, unprovoked, just one
assassinated. Yeah,
yeah.
And they do nothing, and that's kind of my bigger point to Egypt, is like, they just, I don't know.
Well, I don't know what to think about the larger Middle Eastern situation, because obviously there are countries who care. I don't know why. It's a big step to launch a full-blown invasion, to go full tilt into a war with Israel,
which means America too, in essence.
Yeah,
too.
That's what I was going to say. Is I think that like any government in the Middle East who has the power to go to war with Israel is smart enough to realize that the second they cross the border, that is World War III.
Right.
Like, in so much as we're not already in it, I don't think that step can be taken without the U.S. saying, "Okay, it's not just us giving them arms anymore. Now we need boots on the ground. Now, like,
right,
you know, like, Israel needs our help. You know, the entire Middle East is ganging up on them," or whatever bullshit story they come up with. Like, maybe I'm wrong. I mean, I would love to think I'm wrong, but I don't know.
My thought process is that Gaza Strip is not Israel. They are on foreign territory. They're on foreign soil, right?
I'm comfortable saying that about anything in quote unquote Israel.
Yeah, well, I'm saying, like, in a legal aspect, Gaza is technically not Israel, so they shouldn't be there. Two, if they entered Rafah, if the Egyptian army entered Rafah, they're not entering Israel. They're entering the Gaza Strip. And if they're welcomed by the people there, you know, what are they going to do? Israel's going to shoot down an Egyptian soldier?
They already have.
I know, but if they, like, if they're going to provocate the war, I'm like, is America really going to come to a, like, full-on boots on the ground if Israel provocates a full-on war with Egypt?
I don't know.
Yes, I think so.
I
think that would happen.
I don't know. I think that depends on Trump or Biden, right? I think Trump absolutely would. I don't know that Biden would. I don't know. I think, yeah, Biden probably would too. I think everybody would. I would like to think that, like, I don't know. I don't know. I don't have no basis for this misguided faith in America. To
it
say
it
like,
would be given a name like some euphemistic name like a peacekeeping mission, but yeah. they would be sent. Yes.
Yeah, it'd be UN like it was in Iraq in the early days, where it's 99% American and like 1% French and English or whatever it was, or in Afghanistan, not Iraq, but like, you know, where it's yes, technically it's a coalition, but really it's just America.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, and so that begs the question of like. If the West has just basically forsaken Gazans, specifically Palestinians generally, like it seems to me with, you know, just me, little old dummy me, like that it is like largely on the Middle Eastern kind of countries to like, you know, do something, for lack of a better like term. Like it's, and like to your point, Brandon, it must be incredibly,
I
that must
that
be
there
terrifying.
Are things that can be done domestically, but for legal reasons, I'm not going to say them on recording.
Sure. I think, yeah, I mean, I think that like it must, to your point, it must be terrifying that like, yeah, if Egypt wanted to like kind of retaliate or at least clap back for their dead soldier, they would recognize that like if you, you know, poke the bear that is Israel, you're, you know, the cub that's Israel, you're in essence like angering the mama bear that is America. And I think Iran must know that.
Remember that Iran did strike back, and
yeah,
they
fair.
Warned in advance where they would be striking.
Yeah.
And they effectively did like what's like, I don't remember what they bombed, but it was more or less a symbolic target. Like they weren't going for casualties, and the US and media still framed it as an assault against Israel.
Yeah. Iran strikes Israel, Iran targets Israel. None of those headlines that I saw, and we talked about this when it mm-hmm. happened, was like none of those mentioned in any way or framed in any way that it was a retaliation for their officials being killed, their embassy being bombed. Like it was in no way rephrased as retaliation or like a retaliatory strike. It was just Iran unprovoked decides to attack Israel, which was just, again, more to my point from before of just like incredibly disingenuous reporting from these people. But
well, I don't expect anything more less than that. You know, I don't like expect them to give genuine reporting. But I also, I think at this point, like the America, the empire that is America is declining. I just don't think they would fucking invade. I think they're a bunch of pussies at this point. I don't think a lot of the soldiers would want to actually go into fucking Israel to invade another time. They don't have the backing of the public.
I see your point of like,
I'm willing to poke the fucking bear.
Yeah. You think that like, so your kind of point is that we've learned our lesson from Iraq and Afghanistan.
I don't think we've learned our lesson. I just, the people don't want
to
do it.
And just like America would be hesitant to kind of do that again, having just ended a 20-year clusterfuck in the Middle East. I see like that as like being the only thing that would like kind of prevent them, like cooler heads being like,
if we invaded Israel, the actual country, yes, I can see America coming
in.
By
we, you mean Egypt? Or what?
No, I'm talking about, like, sorry, as people are, you know, pro-Palestinian. So
okay.
I'm saying, like, Egypt, sorry. Okay. Sorry. I am Egyptian secretly. No, I'm saying if the Egyptians invaded Israel, the actual state of Israel on the fucking border,
sure,
the actual map, then yes, the Americans would invade. Yeah. There'd be something done. But I think if they entered the Gaza Strip, they have no legal jurisdiction to say that they invaded Israel. And it's an iffy border, but it's like, it's also like,
I think you're assuming that Israel doesn't just consider that Israel. Like, yeah, technically, like the UN considers Palestine, but Israel just considers it Israel, right? Like, you're assuming that Israel respects the UN, like, charter that says Palestine's a state, but like, or like the whatever the international law that says Palestine's a state. But like,
Let's not forget that like the ICC and all are already issued, like talking about or have maybe already issued warrants. I can never remember where we stand. And it's basically like, hey, we're issuing a warrant for the arrest of Benjamin Netanyahu.
It's an application.
Says, no, the fuck you're not.
Yeah. Every politician in America, left and right, Democrat, Republican, just said, nah. And then they invited Netanyahu to come speak to Congress and just basically said, you know, we're not going to do that. I will say this is a somewhat of a retraction, because we talked about that story last week about the ICC warrants going out for Gallant and Netanyahu and a few other people. I said that Germany was kind of a stooge and wouldn't uphold it, but Germany was asked if Netanyahu stepped foot in German soil, would they seize him or whatever? And they said, yes, Germany will apply adhere to international law and the ICC's ruling. So that's what Germany says. Germany said that they would, you know, essentially arrest Netanyahu if he stepped foot in Germany. So that's
what they say.
That's not nothing.
Yeah.
That's what they say, but I don't know.
Yeah, that's fair.
I would be interested to see how that. I'm not saying they wouldn't, but I don't just believe that they would on their
Yeah,
word.
Because German's been pretty one of the countries that like France, Germany, and America are like pretty England pro as well. Israel as far as like European powers go or Western powers go. Yeah, I see your point, and I don't know. Obviously, I don't know one way or the other. I don't have a fortune ball. What do you call it? A crystal ball. I'm not a fortune teller.
Yeah.
I don't know. On the hypothetical that some Arab country or Middle Eastern country invades or defends Gaza, not invading Israel, but like enters on either through the Egyptian border into Rafah, into Gaza.
I don't think they're going to do it. I think that's what they should fucking do.
I agree.
They're going to do it. They're allies with Saudi Arabia and they're allies basically with Israel. I think they're the first country that accepted the Israel statehood, that recognized Israel in the Middle East.
Egypt?
Yes, I believe so. It's either, I'm pretty sure it's Egypt.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we talked about this before.
Remember like the institutional trauma. All of these countries tried and failed to invade Israel in the past. And not that long ago, right? Like 50-ish years ago, they all tried to do this and failed. I guess 60 years ago. But like, so
you
like,
can't go a lot further back than that because
that's the beginning. Back,
there just wasn't a fucking Israel
yeah,
to invade.
That's fair. Yeah. It was like 20 years after Israel's founding that like all of these Arab countries tried this. And like,
but also those Arab countries just became states themselves. They didn't really have a modern army. They didn't have tactics. They just basically went off on a whim.
That the condition hasn't changed. If anything, Israel's gotten more advanced while those countries haven't because there are American embargoes and Israel has America's resources. So like if anything, those conditions are even more one-sided in favor of Israel than they were in 60 whatever that was 69 or whatever. So
Israel's lacking manpower though. I do have to say that.
I don't know.
Egypt's got 80 million people, bro. Iran's got what is like 70 million people.
I don't know.
Lebanon from one side, Syria from one side. I mean, I don't know. I feel like they could just fucking, but that's not going to happen realistically.
Like this massive coalition.
Just one.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think it's a little silly to kind of war game something that'll essentially never happen.
No, no, no. 100%.
Part of me wonders if those countries just lack the institutional sadism that Israel has.
Yeah.
that is very fucking true.
Any rational state doesn't want to enter a war.
No.
It's just bloodshed.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's a good point too. Of like, if you have respect for your own people, like there's something to be said for like just not wanting a war, like just having that like level of respect for your citizens. Also, there's another kind of nuance to this too, where Israel is the only one of these countries we've mentioned that has nuclear capabilities too. So that's a whole other facet to this. I guess Iran might, but yeah. But
I mean, I think even with with Israel, it is allegedly.
Israel 100% has nukes.
No, they 100%. Like, I agree with you.
They won't admit.
I agree with you.
They won't admit they do, but there's no fucking way they don't. Like that's insane.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. They do. I'm just saying allegedly. Yeah. You know, that's
so. And you better believe that Yemen and Egypt and Saudi Arabia but Iran. Everyone knows that they do. So like, or at least highly suspects that they do. So that's another kind of added facet to this conversation of like if you know. Israel's just crazy enough, I would imagine, to just fucking nuke Cairo or nuke whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that would be, yeah.
That's a whole other conversation. Yeah.
I think that might be the point where you actually would cross. Oh, like, it's not a body count, but if they launched nukes, then you might see the tides turn
that would
in
be
favor
it.
Against yeah. Israel. I could see that.
Yeah, sure. I think that would be like the coalition of like all Democrats on board of like, no. Enough's enough. I still think you'd like half Republicans because what's this fuck said? You should just nuke them all, right? There's been many American politicians just saying, yeah, fuck it, nuke Gaza, nuke the West Bank. Like, I don't know. So, like, I think if you were to nuke Cairo or nuke Tehran or whatever, I think that, like, you know, I think a disgusting amount of American politicians would be fine with that. And a disgusting amount of Americans in general would just be fine with that.
No, the Hamas was in Cairo. Why don't you understand?
Hamas was in Tehran.
We had to make sure we wiped them out. Yeah. You know, by bombing the entire city. They have nowhere to go if they take the whole city out.
Yeah.
You know, we 100% eliminated Hamas.
Yeah, I do. I always feel silly at the ends of these conversations, looking back on like, you know, the hour-long conversation we had of, like, deep Middle Eastern geopolitical policy. And, like, are any of us qualified to have this conversation?
Is anybody qualified?
Yeah. No, but at least we recognize we're not. We're not some fucking, like, you know, what's that fallacy? Or not fallacy, but that... That like philosophy of like if you think you're the smartest person in the room, you're definitely
you're
not.
Thinking of the Dunning-Kruger effect.
The Dunning-Kruger effect.
Yeah, okay.
So I always like to ground these conversations, and we realize that we are not fucking, you know, whatever. We don't have international studies degrees or whatever, but we are fairly well read and we have basic critical thinking skills.
You have a degree in politics?
No, I have a degree.
Then
in
you shouldn't have a political podcast. Yeah,
I guess that's fair.
Yeah,
we get that comment a lot.
I know, yeah. But that's not the point. The point is like,
yeah. Well, I think if you have critical thinking skills and you can read a newspaper, then you can have a conversation about these things. So there you go. That's my two cents.
Yeah, I'm like, I have a degree in archaeology, but I'm a fucking researcher. So it's just like it has nothing to do with anything.
I don't think. Yeah.
But you have a degree in archaeology?
I do. Yeah, and geography.
I have a degree in anthropology with a focus in archaeology.
That's the degree I have. Yeah, that's nice. The literal degree.
That's cool. Yeah. I just have a dumb history degree. All the good it did me.
Oh, yeah. No. But
what school offered a degree in dumb history?
Yeah, dumb history. Oh, sorry. I should rephrase. It was American history. Arizona State University, baby.
Oh, my God.
Go Sun Devils.
I have a minor in dumb history.
Yeah.
And
I wanted to go back to school for history, but I'm in grad school now for special education. I'm going down the list of education.
I'll say I don't necessarily feel like I'm adequately well versed enough to really speak authoritatively on, you know, the geopolitics of the Middle East. But a few caveats there are: when October 7th happened and I started hearing a lot of people suddenly having opinions, I was shocked how much more I knew just by virtue of the fact that
yeah.
a lot of these people had just opened their fucking eyes. Most of us have known about the problems with it. Israel for decades.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, this was not news to a lot of us. So it was very easy to see past the whole like Hamas thing. It's like, no, you can't oppress a people for a century and get mad when they strike back.
Yeah. And that may be like Marxist chauvinism, but like, I don't care. Cause you know, when you're on that side of the political spectrum, you are aware of these things and you've been discussing these things and you've been just, you just know about these things. And so, yeah, when something like October 7th happens and all of a sudden you see this huge influx of like, did you see this thing going on? It's like, yeah, dude, that thing's been going on. Like, that was like what you talked about in like our first episode, where we were talking about like the 2011, the 2018, like just going back to all of the Palestinian like attacks for, you know, going back what is essentially decades. That, yeah. So I don't know. I don't feel, I don't know, to all the YouTube hate comments, I don't care.
Comments are...
The other thing I'll say is I forget what his degree is in specifically, but I do have a friend who's got a doctorate with like... an insane, like, he knows Palestine inside and out. Like, that's what he studied. He has a fucking doctorate. And he has corrected me and he has schooled me inside and out. But at the end of the day, our takeaways on the situation match 9 out of 10 times.
Right.
Yeah.
So
I
still, like, even if I don't know the intricacies, I still, in broad enough strokes, have an idea of what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Also, I have this like inherent thing at the core of my being where like if you just try to exterminate a race of people, I know that's bad.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't need to have a whole lot of like institutional knowledge here to just recognize that, hey, genocide bad.
Imagine going to school for 4 years to get like a poli sci degree just to decide whether or not genocide is good or bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, every time.
Yeah. That's a fact. You know what, Brandon, that's a goddamn good point. Yeah.
I think a lot of like my thought processes and my political stance actually came from my degree. When you're learning about archaeology and you're reading a bunch of different types of articles, you realize that there's different ways people process archaeological information, and one of those is this Marxist theory. And so when you process like archaeology history through a Marxist like theoretical lens, you're looking how class, how society is structured. And then when you look at that, you're like, wait, this shit's still going on. It's the same thing. And so like that archaeology turned into politics, turned into history. It's all like commingled.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's cool.
Similar, but not the same. Studying archaeology, I had the good fortune to stumble across a lot of indigenous archaeologists who would just absolutely school Western, like, you know, American chauvinist comes in and starts telling them their history, and they're like, no, my dude, like, you have fucked this all up. And that taught me the lesson of, you know what, you can study something for a decade and you still don't know what the person who grew up there and saw it from since they were a baby, you still don't know what they know.
Yeah.
And it's okay to just shut the fuck up and listen to the people who know.
Yeah.
Exactly.
100%. I mean, that's why I think, again, not to constantly go back to just how cool Marxism is, but I think that's a big part of it, is like recognizing and promoting those kind of voices that, like, you know, if you're the, I guess, expert in the room, like, if you have the actual knowledge of it, no amount of education or reading about something can take away from a person's, like, lived experience. So, you know, you got to listen to that.
That's why we're anti-colonialists, because we want to bring out that indigenous thought, because it brings really that brings in that true perspective of first world accounts.
Yeah. Well, Brandon, thanks so much for joining us.
I always have fun with you guys. So
yeah. Yeah. Always great talking to you. I mean, always. That was the second time, but we really do enjoy these talks. Really good conversation.
Yeah. I'm just going to consider myself an official member of the show now.
That's it.
There you go, man. Yeah. You're always welcome back on our show.
And we're going to change the password, update you, get your name in there. awesome, man. Well, thanks so much. Just while we have you here, you know, want to make sure people can find you. If you want to give your socials and plug where the people can find you.
Oh, great. It's Cars and Comrades podcast on everything. Cars and Comrades meme account, all that bullshit. I don't really push my personal shit because it's...
Well, sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Really, but Cars and Comrades. Anyway. Cars and Comrades podcast, wherever you get your everything.
Yeah, check it out. It's just
podcast.
Four idiot leftists bullshitting about cars, car history, worker history as it pertains to the automotive industry. Shit like that.
One of my students recently asked me, we'll end with this, a couple weeks ago or last week, if I had any, all the money in the world, what car would I drive? And I think they were expecting me to say, like, you know, Bugatti or whatever. And I was like, no, I think I'd want, like, I don't know, like a 77 Challenger, like, restored or something. Like, I'd want, like, something.
77?
I don't know. Because I don't know anything about cars. So I just want, like, yeah. I want, like, I don't know, a late 60s, early 70s, like, American muscle car. Like, a Chevelle or some kind of cool, like, muscle car. Not I want, like, a 65 Mustang, like, the generic kind of what everybody goes to. I would want something with a little more style.
I'm building my dream car right now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah. I would want an 86 911.
Okay. That's a Porsche 911?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, there's what other 911s are there?
I don't know. I only know ambulance? I listen to a lot of hip hop, so that's the only reason I know what a Porsche 911 is. So, all right. Well,
I'm building a Marxist themed pro street drag van.
Dude. Yeah, how's the van? Can we do a quick update? That was 6 weeks ago. We talked about your van. Any progress?
Oh, that van. I don't know if we talked about that van. I have like 8 vans.
Oh, okay. Well, we talked about your quarter mile van you were trying to get in a sub.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
It lives at my buddy's farm 400 miles away. So until I can get it put on a trailer and shipped out here, it's not going to have any progress. But I've done a lot of work on my other vans. But that's more something you listen to my show to hear about. I'm not
going
to be on here for half an hour.
I'm going to hop over and listen to it. So if you want to listen to that, get the story of that van, go follow Cars of Comrades. Brandon, huge pleasure as always. Thanks so much for joining us.
Love it. Yeah.
All right, bud.
All right, y'all take care.
Take care.
Next time, my guy.
Bye-bye.